always enjoy having a special guest, and I always enjoy chatting with this guy, the old rock and roll preacher himself, Mr. Chuck Girard, joining us tonight. Chuck, how you doing?
Hey, Jerry. Good. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, it's my pleasure. It's always fun to chat with you, and it's been a while since we've had a chance to talk.
It has. As we get older, it just seems like it's longer and longer, isn't it?
It does. It does indeed. So for folks who may not have caught you before, let's get reacquainted with you a little bit. No, you're originally from California, right?
I am. I'm L.A. born and California bred. About 15 years ago now, 14, 15 years ago, we moved to Nashville, where I am now. And we've been here for, you know, like I say, 14 or 15 years and enjoying that. Some of our kids have followed us here, so we have grandkids here and most of our kids here, so it's all good.
California to Tennessee, was that a culture shock for you?
It was a little bit. It was more for my wife. She's not warm. She's never warm to the move. She's a California girl through and through, so if a situation should turn, we wind up back in California, she'd be happy. But I like it here. It wasn't that hard. Where we live is very westernized, you know, because it's Nashville area where a lot of folks move from the coasts to be in the music business. So it's not like you're kind of cut out in the middle of the, you know, the Blue Ridge Mountains with corncob pipe. So it's a little bit more like California here. So it's a little easier to take.
Well, Chuck, let's trace your history just a little bit.
Not that there'd be anything wrong with being out in the middle of nowhere with a corncob pipe, speaking figuratively about the pipe, of course, you know, just the idea of being out there. That I could kind of enjoy that, so I'm not demeaning that idea.
Well, Chuck, in your song, Rock and Roll Preacher, you kind of get a little almost biographical there. We're sitting and pounding on the piano. Is that, in fact, how you started into music?
It is really very autobiographical, that song. I started learning music by ear when I was a kid. I just loved, you know, I got turned on to music by listening to Elvis Presley. Specifically, that was my first kind of moment. Well, actually, prior to that, what really got me interested in pop music in general, rock and roll, a friend of my sister's came home and she played the chords to Heart and Soul, you know, and of course that's the heart of rock and roll. And there's just something went off inside me that boy, that's cool. That's something I need to chase. And I did, you know, I listened to some records and things. My sister brought home some doo-wop records, but it wasn't until I heard Elvis Presley that I really started getting into the idea that I need to do that with my life. I love this music and I want to pursue that. So that was sort of my moment of truth. And then I learned to play, you know, I had a choir teacher in high school that taught me the basics of music theory. And I applied those basics, music theory being just what chords are what, and how you make a major chord, a minor chord, that kind of thing. And then I applied that knowledge to the records I enjoyed listening to, and I pick out the, well, just like the song says, picking out the chords to the songs on the piano. And then eventually, it was quite a bit later that before I started to actually write songs, but, you know, I learned to play a little bit and sing the songs I enjoyed, and, you know, that was how I began my musical education. I did have 2 years of classical piano when I was about 10, but I don't remember that much of it stuck, and I wasn't that interested in classical piano, but, you know, it gave me a basis anyhow to know where to put my hands on the piano, and then I went from there.
Now, did you do the garage band thing then in high school?
With friends, you mean? We didn't have, you don't mean garage band on the computer.
No.
We didn't have that. Yeah, well, you know, it wasn't really a garage band. It was more a garage vocal group. I was in junior high school. We were really into doo-wop, and I met some friends that also enjoyed this genre of music. And we were all in choir class. The same choir teacher that taught me music theory, we'd play hooky on him. And when we were supposed to go into the practice booth, you know, and learn our choir parts, we would learn pop songs, you know, doo-wop songs instead. So we probably didn't do that well in choir, but that's what we spent our time learning, how to sing the harmonies and the songs we enjoyed. And then we put a group together out of that choir class. And we met this DJ in Santa Rosa, California, is where I lived at the time, which is up in Northern California. And he became familiar with our sound and everything, and we were doing some local events in town, nothing really big. until he got us on a concert with Santo and Johnny. If you're, some of the folks remember the song Sleepwalk. They were a steel guitar duo. They had a number one record, and we got on their show, and that gave us some visibility in the town. And then he sent us to L.A. with some of his connections to kind of, with a little demo we made. We made four songs. We brought a demo with us to L.A. and actually, like, kind of in the movies, you know, we just knocked on doors and played our demo. We tried to get a record deal, which we did. Finally wound up getting a record deal with a label called Era Records and made our first singles.
And then that led.
So I kind of hopped ahead there a little bit on you.
Oh, that's fine. That's fine. So that then was that kind of like the stepping stone into the Castells and the Hondells and all that stuff?
Yeah, that was actually the Castells, the first group.
Okay.
Yeah, we started in high school, junior high school, really. In my high school years, we played around Santa Rosa. I actually had my first hit in my senior year of high school. And we got a song on the radio, and then we started to tour. Just hop in the station wagon and drive around the country and play these different shows. Actually, I was taking time off from my high school studies and barely graduated, but I did manage to graduate. But it was just so much fun to have a song on the radio and then be, on shows with these people whose records I listened to just a few years earlier. And these were, a lot of these people were really big names. We didn't realize it at the time how big they were, because it wasn't until later they became the legends they were. But we played shows with people like Jerry Lee Lewis and Jackie Wilson and Bobby V, Brenda Lee, people that became, very well known in the rock and roll world later. And of course they were famous at that time, but they were just the guys on the charts like we were, they hadn't quite risen to the stature that they were later to attain at this point, but it was still very exciting because we heard their records on the radio and now we were on shows with them. So for a bunch of kids just barely out of high school, it was pretty exciting. In fact, I was still in my senior year when we started to travel.
And if folks want to hear some vintage 60s Chuck Girard, you can go online and pull up the old classic Little Honda, and you'll hear that some Chuck Girard lead vocals on that, right?
Yeah, well, that came later. That was the group, the Castells. We had two hits that made the charts, and then that slowed down. But we got connected, I did, with a guy named Gary Usher. Let me get the timeline for the folks clear here. We used to do these things called sock hops that was promoting your record in L.A. or wherever to promote your record. And what would happen was it would be just like it sounds. They'd hire a gymnasium or something, and the kids would come in and take off their shoes and they'd dance to the songs they heard on the radio. And the people that sang the songs would be there, and we would just lip sync, though. We didn't actually play. So on one of these sock hops, there was a guy named Gary Usher, and he had one of the very first songs that had the Beach Boys sound, but the song was about a hot rod, and it was called RPM by the Four Speeds. And Gary Usher went on to become one of Brian Wilson's writing partners, and most notably wrote the song In My Room with Brian, one of the biggest Beach Boys songs ever. And so I met Gary backstage at one of these sock hops, and he was aware of the Castells songs on the radio. And he said, I'm doing these sessions, and I'm kind of, I'm working with Brian Wilson, and sometimes Brian comes into the studio, and I get contracts to make hot rod or surf type albums, and would you like to participate and make some money, as a union singer? Well, I was a little reticent because I was, I had a record contract, and it would probably technically be breach of contract to sing on someone else's record, but I took a shot at it, and the music was different enough from what we were doing that I felt pretty safe about it, and it was extra money. And so I started to sing lead because I could make triple scale, and Gary liked my voice. And so I started doing all these kind of Beach Boy ripoff songs. And we made this one album that went over to Mercury Records. We were, it was work for hire for them. And usually we'd finish these albums and deliver them, and that would be the end of it. You know, and probably most of them we never heard of again. But we delivered this album, and oh, I don't know what it was, a few weeks, months later, I heard this song on the radio. It sounded familiar to me, and I'm thinking, you know, that's a Beach Boys song. Then all of a sudden I realized it was me singing lead, and realized, you know, well, that's that record we cut for Nick Vinay over at Mercury. And so I called Gary and I said, hey, I heard our song on the radio. And he said, yeah, it's climbing the charts. And it happened to be Little Honda by the Hondells. First Gear, It's All Right. And it's actually a bigger record than the two Castell records had been. So that record, I believe, actually made the top 10. So it was kind of fun, you know, and I did that for about 4 years and worked with Gary Usher and worked with Brian Wilson in the studio and in on some of the songs. Brian would come in, we'd sing together. And later on, Brian produced a record for the Castells as well. So it was a very, very cool time in the life of a young guy, you know, just barely out of high school.
Well, that's a little recap of Chuck Gerard professionally. Now, what about Chuck Gerard spiritually, Chuck? Did you grow up in a Christian home?
Well, I was raised Catholic, and, you know, we had the legalistic form of Catholicism, going to church every Sunday, and if you missed, there was a certain degree of a sin attached to missing church, as well as everything else. Anyone who's familiar with Catholic doctrine, at least back then. And it was kind of legalistic and dry for me. And so when I got interested in music, I kind of rejected the whole church thing. And of course, by this time, I was out on my own, so I could make my own decisions and all that. But I lost touch with God and, you know, the idea of going to church. I don't believe I was ever actually at that time really born again. I went to church more out of, you know, legalism than I did out of, you know, devotion to God. More fear of hell and fear of punishment than, you know, devotion to God. So I just sort of gave up the whole thing, and I thought, well, if I'm going to hell for some of the stupid things they say I'm going to hell for, I might as well just go to hell for something really worthwhile, you know, and go out there and drink booze and meet women and make music. So that was my philosophy. So I drifted away from any connection with God, even if whatever I had, you know, at that point. Just sort of rejected the whole thing and went full bore after the music. And it wasn't until I got involved in drugs later on, specifically marijuana and the psychedelic drugs, that I got reinvigorated in this idea of, you know, getting back into finding out who God was. And that brought me into my hippie period, which ultimately did lead to me becoming really born again later on, you know. So if you want to pick some of that apart, we can talk about bits and pieces of that if you'd like to.
Yeah, because I know a little bit of that story, and if I have it correctly, of course, you know, feel free to correct me if I'm wrong. And you guys, you know, Love Song was a pre-Christian band, I guess, basically mm-hmm. the same guys. But didn't you all come to Christ like right around the same time?
Yeah, it was really, in my opinion, a divine appointment, God's timing. The real quick story there was what happened was, I was doing music and. I had this epiphany. Well, first of all, the whole scene changed. The Beatles came in and changed the whole scene. The whole face of music changed, and record labels weren't interested in work for hire like we were doing anymore. They were looking for self-contained bands, Beatles, and then the British Invasion came, and of course it was the LA groups like the Knickerbockers and stuff that had the Beatle kind of sound, but they were self-contained bands, and we weren't. We were just a vocal group. And the musicians would be hired, you know, session guys, like some of the most famous of the day, Hal Blaine and Glenn Campbell and Leon Russell, those kind of guys played on our the instruments on our sessions. So the Beatles came in, changed the whole scene, and, I wasn't working in the studios as much anymore and got connected to the whole hippie thing and got a hold of my first drugs and went full bore into the whole hippie thing. And that was probably around 1965 when I really dove headlong into that. And then that led to meeting up with Denny Correll, some other, guys that went on to become somewhat well-known in Christian music. And, of course, some of the core members of what became Love Song later on, John Mailer and Jay Truax. And we all put together this hippie band, and we moved to Salt Lake City and started playing regularly there in a club. And just kind of seeking God, taking drugs, reading the Bible, reading Eastern philosophies. And we moved back to, eventually, it's too long a story to give the exact chronology here, but we moved back to the L.A. area, and we were living in Laguna Beach. And now that this is about, we had moved to Hawaii for a while because we thought that was the spiritual happening place, and eventually wound up back in Laguna Beach in Southern California toward the late part of the 60s, around, you know, the first part of 1969. We moved back to Laguna Beach, found ourselves in Laguna Beach, and we started to hear about Calvary Chapel at that point. So after about 4 years of this seeking God through drugs and Eastern philosophies and everything, we started hearing about this hippie church. A lot of hippies, we'd pick up hippies along Pacific Coast Highway. Usually you do that just to get some free drugs. You know, you pick up some hippies and they might have a lid of weed and offer you a joint. But now we were picking up hippies and they were saying, hey, have you guys met Jesus? He's changed our life. And in the context of those conversations, Calvary Chapel's name would always come up. And we started thinking, Calvary Chapel, everybody's talking about Calvary Chapel. Wonder what's going on up there. And we knew it was mostly about hippies at this point. So we thought, well, you know, the hippies, these guys, you know, they're on the same quest we are. And they're landing at this Calvary Chapel. Maybe that's a place we need to check out. And then, of course, we did. And we went up there separately for the most part. Some of them went up in different pairs. But as you say, around the same time, almost within 3 or 4 weeks, enough of us had conversion experiences, I'd say. We had met Jesus and God's timing and all that, and our lives were changed, and we wanted to play our music for a different purpose now. And so we were already a band, and we were going to Calvary Chapel. Just if the doors were open, we were there. And we had been writing these songs about our quest for God. We wrote some songs already that had the name of Jesus in them and you know, different lyrics about our search for God. And we thought, wow, there's hippie preachers here. It would be really cool if we could play here because, you know, we have the look of a, you know, a current band, and with a hippie preacher that looks like Jesus and a band that looks like Crosby, Stills, and Nash, that would be pretty cool. So we went in to see Pastor Chuck and see if he'd let us play. And he took us out into the sanctuary and interviewed us for, you know, just out of politeness, he said later on. He said, at that point, there wasn't any way you guys were going to play on my, you know, my services because, you know, long hair and rock and roll and electric guitars and all that. But at the end of the little, you know, interview, he asked to hear a song. And I know we played Welcome Back. And it really touched his heart. And the next thing we heard was, can you guys play tonight? And it was youth night. Lonnie Frisbee was the hippie preacher, was preaching. And so we played for the first time. And it was the beginning of this great, huge explosion out of Calvary Chapel. The church grew from 200 to 2,000 in about 4 months. We had to move into a circus tent to accommodate the crowds because we outgrew the chapel so quickly. And that was the beginning of, you know, the ministry of Love Song, and not really the beginning of the Jesus movement per se. That had already been kind of bubbling under, but it all kind of gelled at Calvary Chapel. That's where the media came to get their stories and do their sound bites and all that. And so that was kind of the environment in which we were born again, and we began to play and began our ministry at that point.
Well, let's take a music break real quick, Chuck, and since you brought it up, let's go ahead and play Welcome Back.
All right.
For the folks.
Sounds
We are chatting with Chuck Girard here, his classic love song for you. It's a Welcome Back from the archives in WJTL.